equals burn. The propaganda's win, stress feeding on my tension. My countrymen, they love their fiction. Words are now displayed with good intentions.
Welcome to 1 of 200. We're on hiatus, but not really. Just for weekend current events. But we're here for a midweek episode about the... I don't know the words to describe what is happening in global politics at this point, and especially in the Middle East. But that's what we're going to try and do. I am joined by my co-host, Dr. Josephine Varghese. How are you doing, Josephine?
Hola, everyone. Sorry, I'm good. I mean, it is a difficult time. We're coming up to 12 months of the ongoing genocide in Gaza. I've been engaging in some of the organizing around that 12-month, marking the 12 months of the genocide and also celebrating the resistance against the genocide, which has become a global movement. So, yeah, I'm, engaged in that, but otherwise I'm okay.
And we're also joined by, do we call you friend of the podcast? Is that the terminology? Dr. Adam Arata, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Kyle.
How are you holding up?
Oh, that's a nice way of putting it, eh? Because the old how are you question is pretty difficult to answer these days. It's just, this jarring contradiction between climate collapse and catastrophes happening all over the world, and then obviously what is now clearly regional war. And, very quickly New Zealand will no doubt be sucked into it directly. And it's just this jarring contradiction between understanding those things are happening and then the daily reality of performing mundane tasks and walking around while people seem to be oblivious to what's happening. So platforms like this are really good for us to be able to get together and have spaces where that reality is at least acknowledged.
Yeah, it's really sad. It's actually quite upsetting to me at this point, you say that reality is acknowledged, because as people living in the West, most of the information that we get from the institutions, media or otherwise, is struggling to be charitable, to acknowledge what is happening.
Yeah, it's almost like we're on a plane that's about to crash, and at this point we're just trying to keep a black box of what's happening.
Yeah. And watching, you wake up in the morning, you check the news. I know a lot of people have tapped out from doing that at this point. And you can't really go to New Zealand mainstream media if you want to be sure that you have the information you need to assess what's happening. So yes, we're here to at least acknowledge, hopefully give some insights, hopefully tell you some things you maybe hadn't heard about what's happening in the Middle East, and just broadly discuss and analyze and critique what's going on from a critical Western perspective, let's say that. So this week, things have escalated once again, and it's one of those things where it's been an accelerating genocide for nearly 12 months. We're coming up to the 12-month mark for October 7th, and yet the US, who I'm very happy to say are kind of leading the way on this, as much as Israel is the fulcrum for it, is somehow still finding new ways to make things worse. And at the same time, and this is, I guess, where the Western media is playing its part as a stenographer or arm of empire or public relations mouthpiece, has continually told us that the US wants to avoid a regional war. They're looking to, they need a ceasefire. They're trying to make things cool down while sending billions and billions of dollars to Israel, billions and billions of weapons for the genocide and now a regional war.
And it's not just the media that's failing as well, right? We've seen, obviously, we're recording this a day after Iran's strike on Israel, most recent strike. And, The Western media is framing that as an escalation rather than a response, quite measured, restrained kind of response, actually. So it's not just the media that's failed that's led to this point of this action being carried out. It's international law, it's the UN, ICJ, the ICC, all of these institutions that are supposed to prevent genocide that have failed. And so in the recent weeks, we've seen just so much new action. We've seen the Gaza method being applied in Syria and in Lebanon, the terrorist attacks, the assassinations that we're seeing, which I hope we'll get into a bit more as we continue this discussion, leading up to, just this quite awesome, in the true sense of the word, display that we saw when Iran fired dozens, if not hundreds, of ballistic missiles on Israel.
And at military targets, I want to, which is something that we're not really getting kind of acknowledgement of in Western media. And you mentioned, the other institutions, but there's also the other states as well, all of whom are bound by the Genocide Convention to be intervening when there is a plausible case for genocide, which there is, and yet.
Well, I really liked your characterization of the problem as a fulcrum of accelerating genocide. I think that's correct. Let's make sense of what's been happening. There is a small region called Gaza where 2.1 people are concentrated into with massive walls. I mean, for the last 16, 17 years, even if a person or a thing needs to go in or out of of those borders, it needed the permission of the occupying state, which is Israel. And ever since, after October 7, we are seeing that these people do not have an air force. These people do not have a naval force. They are being bombarded, on top of which that there's a siege there, where food, aid, water, electricity supply, everything's being blocked. Not just that, whatever food they have been growing traditionally in their land is being destroyed. A majority of the buildings turning into rubble, 85% of the schools being destroyed, 100% of the universities either destroyed or damaged. And yet we have, in New Zealand and other Western countries, or even most of the, global countries are seemingly helpless in stopping this, and it is continuing, as this, accelerating fulcrum of genocide extends into southern Lebanon. It still continues in Gaza, and these people are completely, without any cover. So in this moment, it is within this context that we are seeing this counterstrike from Iran, and we must remember to contextualize it within the fact that, Iran has been attacked multiple times by the United States and Israel illegally, including conducting assassinations. And, Adama, you started talking about the assassinations. We must remember that these assassinations of Ismail Haniyeh and of Nasrallah, of Hezbollah, these are the chief negotiators with whom we need to negotiate any deal with, right? Whether it is the deal for the hostages, we must first remember there are thousands of Palestinian hostages, in Israeli custody for years, languishing for years, children being taken into custody and then coming back, a lot of them not coming back ever, some of them coming back as adults, not having seen their mother and their parents for years and decades. So, whether it is a hostages, whether it is peace, whether it's ceasefire, whether it is lasting security and stability in the region, we need negotiations. And Israel is targeting the chief negotiators for its assassinations. So it is clear that Israel is not looking for any negotiations, any peace, any ceasefire. It is an accelerating fulcrum of mass violence at this point.
Absolutely. And it's these kinds of details that are just driving me absolutely insane. because we are told again and again that this isn't the reality, right? That there's not a genocide, that Israel are the victims, that everyone else is escalating it, that the US is doing everything they possibly can. But as soon as you take any single one of hundreds of discrete details around what is happening in the region, it immediately gives the lie to the lies of the Western apparatus. You mentioned the assassination of the key negotiators. It becomes incredibly clear, and I'm of the belief that this is also clear to the US and to Israel and to all their cheerleaders that a negotiation isn't what's wanted. That they want a regional war, that they want a genocide, that they want a greater Israel, and anyone following Israeli media or Israeli politicians talking to their own people, will have known this since October last year, at the very least. But I mean, go all the way back to 1947, right? And go even further back to when Zionism was created. This
Yeah.
has always been a series of goals that they are trying to achieve. But yeah, I have absolutely zero belief that any of them believe any of the PR that they are peddling at this point. There's just absolutely no way they can believe that while taking the actions that they take, which is. There's such a horrible Kafkaesque absurdity to it. Like, we've all woken up and are all giant bugs, trying to live in this reality, which is constantly bombarding us with information that both we and the people bombarding us with it know to be untrue.
And it's just so dangerous what's being normalized now. Like, this pager attack, this walkie-talkie attack that took place about 2 weeks ago, where this is clearly targeting civilian devices. This is clearly a terrorist attack. I think about 3,000 people were injured, over half of whom were civilians. And yet the ruling class and the media are framing this as being like some sophisticated attack that we should be proud of, that Israel should be proud of, when it's a disgusting, clearly terrorist attack. Same with the assassinations. So they weren't just assassinations, right? These were attacks that killed hundreds of civilians. When did that become normal? That these can be framed as like promoting justice. This is absolutely, the place that we're in now is so frightening. It is so depraved, and it's now just so normalized. It's such an unsafe world now, where these types of things have been normalized in this way, and it feels like, some people are saying that, Israel's getting the upper hand, and the only advantage they seem to have is just the element of surprise that comes from doing things that no other country would even consider. And I thought it was quite interesting with with Iran's retaliation that we've just seen. And on the one hand, they're trying to play the victim, Israel's trying to play the victim in that situation by saying, like, oh, these were targeting civilians, and at the same time bragging that no civilians were killed. It's like, because they were targeting Mossad and an air base, and these strategic and very clearly linked sites that were linked to the assassination of Haniyeh and Nasrallah. And so it's just this really interesting game where it's actually hard in some ways for the different actors to actually put themselves in the minds of their opponents. And I think that's also why we see these assassinations, because Israel and the West have this genocidal agenda that's completely unpopular in most countries. And if we did eliminate the leaders, I'm not suggesting we do that, but if the lim leaders were somehow eliminated, that would actually potentially change the course of how those states operated. But that's not true of like a movement like Hezbollah, which is very grassroots. It's very much in response to Israeli aggression, where the leadership, Nasrallah was beloved by many people in the region and seen as like a incredibly important on a global scale anti-colonial leader, and they have it in their minds that they can just eliminate somebody like that, and that somehow that will limit Hezbollah's ability to carry out their defense of Lebanon. But what we're seeing, obviously, is quite the opposite with the recent ambush that Hezbollah set up to counter the Israel ground invasion. Showing that there is no problems at all with their command and control.
It's just a series of events. We just, I mean, the tent massacre, you know, the bread mass, the flour
Which ones?
massacre.
Which ones, right? Like
It's just
multiple of both.
exactly multiple of both. And then we are coming to, you know, what's happening in Lebanon, and now the troops being sent to to invade South Le Lebanon, and Western media, including New Zealand media, saying it's like a ground operations.
A limited ground operation.
Oh my
Yeah,
goodness, yeah.
limited by Hezbollah.
So I also want to, you know, make this context of Lebanon clear to the listeners. Like, Lebanon has been a target of Israeli operations and invasions for decades now. I mean, some of the worst massacres happened to Palestinian refugees who were displaced during the Nakba and the consequent after the Nakba, the displacements that happened in waves. And you know, there are huge Palestinian refugee populations in Lebanon and other surrounding regions. And Israel has committed massacres like Sabra and Shatila in Lebanon in the 80s. And this it is against this belligerence of the Israeli state and the violation of Lebanese sovereignty that an organization like Hezbollah takes, you know, shape and rises and becomes popular within Lebanon. So these are indeed legitimate resistance movements. I think, you know, as we approach 12 months of this genocide, I think a lot of people are coming to the realization that whether it's Hamas, whether it's, you know, Hezbollah, whether it's the PFLP of Leila Khalid, these are legitimate resistance movements against a, you know, a genocide and a people who don't have, you know, any, for example, military to support them, to support their sovereignty and self-determination, and their resistance is protected under international law, and occupied people do have the right to defend themselves. Nobody talks about the right of Palestinians or Lebanese people to defend themselves. And I was listening to a geopolitics scholar yesterday, and a military scholar who was saying that actually, you know, the nature of Israel's operations, it's really not just to, you know, defuse the resistance militias or the operatives who are part of Hamas and Hezbollah. It's actually to create, their operations suggest that they want to create mass fear to a point where people do not feel safe to live in those lands. So it is indeed like so many people, so many anti-colonial scholars, you know, ranging from Nelson Mandela to, you know, to Thomas Sankara, all these anti-colonial leaders have seen Israel and its policies in the region as a colonial enterprise to cleanse the region of the Arab and the, you know, the original population there, in order to expand the settler colony. And that's exactly what's happening now in Lebanon. It's creating fear, mass death. It's actually the operations are in residential complexes, killing hundreds of people in one go, and it's continuing as we speak. So creating fear, ethnically cleansing these regions. It's really, really horrific. And to think that the Western, you know, security establishment, some of the key players within it, they are stakeholders in the military industrial complex, and they're profiting from this suffering and this destabilization. And also to think that it is connected to the, you know, rising tensions in, including in our part of the world, in the South Pacific. How the United States is now ramping up the militarization, you know, urging New Zealand, countries like New Zealand, to spend more on military and military equipment. South Pacific, now Australia, inviting nearly a dozen of nuclear-powered submarines into the South Pacific. So all this is linked to, the Western security establishment, the military-industrial complex, which actually profits from increased tensions and from wars, and in this case, genocide.
Yeah, there's a really horrible graphic yesterday, I think, which showed everything in the stock market crashing except for the arms companies, which were suddenly going wild. You know, Lockheed Martin and all the rest doing really good business. I wonder why. And I wonder if that has any impact on why people are making these decisions. And this is why I say, as well, and the links you're talking about there, Josephine. Everyone knows at this point that this is how it works. That the lies being told to us are being told, knowing that they're lying to the electorate, that they're lying to the rest of the populace, and knowing that everyone knows that they're being lied to as well. I think at this point, it is almost just out of hand. It is a tactic to ensure that people feel powerless and that they can't do anything. Look at us. We are undertaking atrocities. We know we are. We're smirking on stage whenever we get up to be questioned about it, as political leaders. And we're telling you the opposite's happening and you can't fucking do anything about it. It's really, really nasty stuff.
I just also want to say, talk about, the fact that, yes, the media is failing to, uphold its role in this, in these times. But just after those strikes yesterday, by Iran, entire Western media calling it a failure. And, why do they consider it a failure? It's because nobody died.
Major success in civilian deaths.
It's
It's
horrific.
disgusting. Like, it's such a mask off moment, eh? And they don't realize what they're doing either a lot of the time. They're not smart enough. But because they're such stenographers, because they are just a mouthpiece and they're not the ones to like designing this public relations strategy and this comms strategy and just parroting it, they're constantly caught out revealing the nature of what they're doing. I think there was a guy from CNN yesterday or the day before, who basically gave the game away on the civilian death thing, and around the human shields argument, because he was talking about the Mossad headquarters being in downtown Tel Aviv, and you're like, wait a fucking second,
What's the devil's
isn't
strategy?
this what they kept telling us about the hospitals that they had no evidence for and were bombing?
Every
Yeah, it's.
accusation is a projection
It is, but like to
or is
just
a
such,
confession.
yeah, to such an extreme degree at this stage, after the Iranian attack yesterday, Israel responded just by bombing Beirut, bombing civilian areas of Beirut,
And Gaza.
and well, that was another thing again, just horrific. Just like, oh, we're just gonna mask some people out of frustration, essentially. But they were bombing near the Lebanese parliament and near the United Nations regional headquarters. I don't know how much more evidence people need that this is a rogue state. They banned just this morning, I think, or yesterday evening, they banned Antonio Guterres, the head of the UN, from entering Israel. It is not going to stop as long as they are a US puppet. And I want to be very, very clear about this because it's somehow still in the fucking discourse about the US being Israel's puppet. That is not how these things work, people. Israel is a Western project. The people funding and arming Israel are the United States and the military-industrial complex that is homed in the United States. Israel is their attack dog here. It is about projecting power in the Middle East. And I think for many people making these decisions, it's also about bringing back a classic clash of civilizations. And that's why we see this constant dehumanization, this constant appeal to Islamophobia, and
Yeah.
anti-Muslim and anti-Arab rhetoric, because there is a significant number of powerful people, regardless of where, which part of which ideology drives them to do this. Believe that this is what needs to happen for the West under a US hegemony, to maintain primacy in a world where multipolarity is becoming a greater likelihood. This is it's horrific for and it's just fucking horrible for everyone in the region, but for the US, they don't even give a shit. Like, that's not even what this is about, you know. And you mentioned it, Josephine. You know, it's about primacy in other regions as well. It's about forcing other large powers to either take sides, get involved, and risk taking fire themselves, so that the US can say, "Look, we're the big boys." It's fucking disgusting.
It does seem like, things are looking grim for Israel, though. Let us, if we have a fair assessment of what happened in terms of Israel, sorry, Iran's, counter strike against Israel, it was successful. This is what not media is not going to tell you. They were able to damage to a great extent the Nevatim air base in the Negev desert, which is one of the key air bases of Israel. The attack also proves the vulnerability of the Israeli Iron Dome, and that Iran now has technologies that can, in fact, which is it makes Israel quite vulnerable. So, from the Iranian point of view, this was a huge success because it, and Israel's, strategic sort of officials will definitely know that this is a success for Iran. And when it comes to global, what do you say, opinion, Israel is now coming, popular opinion, Israel is in a corner. And this fulcrum that you were mentioning before, it might be in a death spiral.
Yeah, I think it's like so interesting kind of thinking about what it means in terms of the success or failure of an operation like this. And I think, Iran has demonstrated itself to be very strategic, very calculating, very disciplined. And I'll say that instead of restrained, and to the point where I think there are a lot of people in the global south, shall we say, who were frustrated. Like, when is the response going to happen? And some people were saying they were being strategic and trying to build up the psyop on the Israeli citizenry. And then when we think back to when Iran's consulate in Damascus was bombed, and the response that they put out the message, they emailed ahead of time, like a week ahead of time, to say this is what you can expect. And so Israel lined up its mates, the US, France, Jordan, the UK, and they all strategically, through shooting missiles down from the air, to anti-ballistic missiles being shot from ships, I believe. All together, this very calculated attempt to ramp up Israel's defenses. And we were only dealing with, mostly drones, cruise missiles flying slowly, and then some missiles that followed. But I think Iran was able to learn a lot through that operation. Israel was then, of course, given time to build its defenses up as well. But then we see that this attack was successful in the ways that you mentioned. It demonstrated the vulnerability of their anti ballistic missile defenses. There was a US warship that shot 12 anti ballistic missiles at the incoming missiles from Iran, and apparently that's how many they make in a year. It usually takes them a year to make 12 of these anti-ballistic missiles. So I think it really did show the vulnerability of Israel, which is, the only reason is what Israel exists is because they have this veneer of invulnerability, and that has certainly been damaged. And like, they did that without taking civilian lives. They,
Which is incredible.
how did this impact the economy? How did this impact the global perception of Israel? And I think, like, thinking back to the April Iran strikes, it's almost like the West, like, went, "Oh yeah, nothing to see, we don't worry about that," and carried on. And this time, actually, we see them trying to paint this as a reason to be able to escalate. which is an interesting little difference. So which is it? Is it a failure, or is this a reason that you want to escalate? You know, they constantly seem to want to have it both ways. So I think
And the Western leadership coming together to denounce Iran's, horrific, unprovoked attacks. Suddenly, when they speak nothing, they haven't condemned Israel yet for its attacks on unarmed civilians for months. I think it's also important to remember that Iran has been a victim of Western imperialism for, more than 7 decades. From the 1953 coup against the democratically elected leader in Iran at that time until now, with the sanctions, like illegal sanctions on Iran, Iran has been a victim of so many illegal incursions into its sovereignty by Israel, by the United States, and by the West. And so, the idea that this is unprovoked, the fact that Iran is, like you said, so disciplined and measured, speaks to their credit, actually. The fact that they have been so measured and disciplined and targeting only the military bases and making sure that civilians are not attacked, this is something to their credit.
Yeah, it's been really interesting to watch, and we've talked about this on current events episodes constantly for the last 12 months. But the unwinding of what is referred to as a rules-based international order, but particularly the way in which the enemies, the presumed enemies of the West, are the ones sticking to the rules more often than not, who are trying their damnedest to come to the negotiating tables. There's a thing that comes up, and it was in the times of Israel, even. Like, all of this is being reported in Israeli media. There's no reason for standard Western media not to report this stuff. It's pathetic. That Hamas offered the hostages back on October 9th and 10th last year. It was an immediate trolley trying to negotiate around this. It is not Hamas, it is not Hezbollah, it is not Iran. Who are breaking the rules of engagement here, or breaking the rules of war? It is Israel and the US and the other partners who are assisting them in genocide, atrocities, and war crimes. And there's one other thing that came out this week in regards to this as well. Whether you agree with Iran's choice on this or not, but apparently, part of the reason that they didn't respond or counterstrike after the assassination of Haniyeh in Iran was because they were promised by the US that they were going to have a ceasefire and get the negotiations done. Personally, I wouldn't have trusted US leadership to be honest about that, but they have been trying to do this in good faith. And
Absolutely.
even now, after the Israeli escalation and attacks on civilians in Lebanon, hidden under the cover, and it's so fantastical to say, under the cover of assassinating the leader of Hezbollah, right? Which is not a valid thing to do anyway. Like, a missile assassination on sovereign territory is already illegal. So using it as a justification for killing hundreds of civilians shouldn't fly, but apparently does for all those fantastic international journalists we have out there. You fucking cowards. Even then, even in this set of circumstances, Iran, they are not engaging the same levels of dehumanization that the West currently is of Arabs, and particularly of Palestinians. Yeah, like, you can't do anything but credit them for that. I'm sorry. Like, maybe I will get cancelled, but it's absurd to believe otherwise, at this point, at this stage of things. Anyone saying otherwise is just lying through their fucking teeth.
And it's so outrageous because none of this needed to happen at all, right? Like none of the strike that we've just seen, like all of it, none of it needed to happen. Hezbollah engaged in the conflict, opening up a front with Israel on its Lebanon border or Palestine, and on October 8, and they've said from the outset, and Ansar Allah have said from the outset, and all of the nations participating and the axis of resistance have said from the outset that this will end when there is a ceasefire in Gaza. And it just goes to show that they're not actually interested in their hostages, they're not actually interested in a ceasefire. This is part of their colonial agenda.
Yeah, it is indeed. If you think about the incursions into Iranian sovereignty, from the 1953 coup d'etat, what happened was the new leader was going to nationalize Iranian oil reserves, and this is what the CIA didn't like. They want access to it, so they installed a new puppet government headed by Shah Pahlavi. And it was against this that the Islamic Revolution happened in 1979, and now they have this current government since then, which is the Islamic Republic government, and on top of that, they're under sanctions, including for medicines, right? This is a country that has been targeted so much by Western imperialism, and this is why it's for them that Israel has become an existential threat, not the other way around. They were already there. It's Israel that's come there and is threatening them. And in the midst of all this, we have the US elections coming up and the role of the liberal establishment in the West, like including some of our fallen heroes like AOC,
I don't know about
endorse.
fallen heroes. I mean, they had to be up on something before they fell, right? Like.
But we had, at least I had hope. When people like AOC came up initially after that Bernie wave, and she said that Kamala Harris is trying her best for a ceasefire. The same week that Biden-Harris administration sanctioned and gave another 20 billion in military aid to Israel, and just recently another 8 or 9 billion just last week. So it's almost like the liberals in the USA, like the Democrat Party, is like, we need to vote against Trump, vote for Democrats to defeat fascism. But now it's like, I've once spoken about this in one of the podcasts here, that I think that from a global South perspective, USA is fascistic already. And then I got shot down, I got criticized for saying that. But look at what's happening now. You can have this quiet and sophisticated fascism offered by Obama and the likes of Harris and Obama, or you can have the loud and vulgar fascism offered by Trump. But either way, the US establishment is fascistic, both inward and outward.
It's an awful position if you're trying to put political pressure onto parties. And it reminds me of actually when the genocide began a year ago here in Aotearoa, and we were right on the brink of an election. No political parties, left or right, were willing to speak on this issue. And it was
Yeah, I
extremely
remember.
frustrating, right? We're trying to like get some kind of cut through in the media. Politicians can do that so easily, but none of them were willing to speak at that time before the election. And then we had weeks and weeks of no government being formed, and so there was nobody to be accountable to represent our issues, our interests. And then once we did have people that we could call to account, all they did was say that they wanted a ceasefire. in this vague way that ceasefire has lost all of its meaning now. And what we're seeing in the US at the moment is a similar situation where everybody's allowed to blame Biden, but he's obviously senile and on his way out. It's actually quite shocking how limited his cognitive functioning is at the moment. So it's like can you blame him because he's on his way out and he's senile? You can't really blame Harris because she's trying to like keep her hands clean of it. So it's just this awful kind of limbo that, I mean, I don't care for any of them, don't get me wrong. I don't think there's any hope there at all, but it is, I just mean, it's just difficult, I think, to get political pressure right now.
Shows a big weakness in the Western liberal democracy, quote unquote. This how Western liberal democracy works. Like the fact that I don't think Biden is senile, that's not news. I think he was senile 4 years ago. I don't think his senility has, increased drastically. I mean, he was already pretty bad at the beginning of his term. It just shows that the real power lies elsewhere, that the Western state are nothing but salespeople or, a front for the ruling class. And regardless of who comes into power or not, the interests of the ruling class who profit from imperialism, from genocide, from wars, it continues. That rule continues. And yeah, now we have a lame duck president, I'm going to call Biden, because he's there, but he's not there. And Kamala Harris is trying her best to distance herself from Biden. The opposition is trying to identify her with Biden. It's really interesting. And it's true. I remember, October 7 happened and we were in a similar situation. Like, we didn't have a clear majority or something, but it was the Labour government continuing and the elections were going to happen. But Chris Hipkins' first instinct was to say Israel has a right to defend itself and to condemn Hamas, but never, never condemned Israel's strikes.
I actually want to shout out to Nanaia Mahuta on this one because almost immediately she said we need to de-escalate and there needs to be negotiations. And she put a post out on Twitter. And she was, I guess she was still Minister of Foreign Affairs at that point, and immediately got monstered for it. And that's when Hipkins came in and was like, oh, that's not what she really meant. Like, I think tweet got deleted. But yeah, we it was there. There was the potential to for our electoral representatives to rally around that voice at that time, which was, because that was the correct response. All right, say goodbye though, Josephine, if you've got to go, so that the rest of the so the audience knows that you left and we didn't just like not talk to you again.
All right. I just gotta go. I have another engagement right now. So yeah, thank you for having me back to discuss this really important issue. And I will be back on 1 of 200 very soon. Thank you.
Thanks, Josephine.
Bye. She's great.
So we had the
Ever
potential.
invite me to 1 of 200? If Josephine's on, I'll say yes, because I always
Yeah,
know
that's
that,
right.
oh,
Yeah,
that woman can talk.
no,
It's gonna
fantastic.
be fine. It
Yeah, we had the opportunity to rally around this, and everyone was just like, "Oh, I don't know what to say. I'm too spooked." And that shifted. That did shift, and the Greens and Te Pāti Māori, and even Labour in parts did better messaging on it. The Greens in particular, were showing up at the rallies in support of Palestine, but it didn't really feel like it moved anything here, did it?
Yeah, it's definitely frustrating, I think, for protesters around the world. Just getting traction has been extremely difficult. And, with this recent counterstrike by Iran, there is just this like deepening sense that we're about to get sucked into this. And it's like I think it's really important for us to think about what type of role we want New Zealand to be playing and to make that really clear to our leaders. And while we're talking about the Greens and Te Pāti Māori, the Māori Party put out a statement. Did you see it?
Yeah, yesterday.
Yeah, it was a great statement. I'm actually going to read it because
Get it out.
and I'm no
Yeah.
like, big supporter of Te Pāti Māori. I'm not a member or anything, but I was very impressed with this. They said over 41,000 Palestinians have been murdered by Israel in the last 12 months. At the same time, Israel have launched attacks at least against at least four other countries in the Middle East, including Lebanon, Syria, Yemen, and Iran. You cannot play aggressor and the victim at the same time. What we are seeing today is the culmination of decades of US imperialism in the Middle East. Iran has for a long time been a barrier to Western control in the region. This is what the West's uncritical support of Israel has been leading up to. Meanwhile, the New Zealand government is in talks with the United States about joining AUKUS to further support their war efforts. This represents the next phase of global colonization, and it is being negotiated behind closed doors. The US wants to use Aotearoa as a Pacific spy base. This could mean the end of our long-standing nuclear-free policy to allow their warships into our waters. AUKUS threatens our sovereignty as an independent nation. and the mana motuhake of every nation in the Pacific. It threatens to drag Aotearoa into World War III. The New Zealand government is putting everyone in Aotearoa at risk through their complicity. They must end all talks about joining AUKUS immediately. They must sanction Israel and cut ties with all countries who are committing and aiding war crimes. As Tangata Whenua, we will not allow our sovereignty to be determined by others, whether it is the New Zealand government or the United States government. Te Pāti Māori condemns the killing of innocent people. We condemn all actions that have led to the escalation of war.
Just incredible how much they were able to get out in such a short statement and link so much together. But especially that they led with the deaths of Palestinians,
Which is what this is really about,
which
right?
is like in the New Zealand discourse is just never happens. I was having a quick look at the news before we started recording. I used to go over, reportage on Middle Eastern conflicts, as the euphemism goes. And it's all Israel says, Israel does this, something happened to Israel, et cetera, et cetera. Syndicating the New York Times, stuff coming in from Reuters and AP, and just nothing about the retaliatory attacks in Gaza following the Iranian counterstrike, where Israel just like, we're just going to massacre hundreds more Palestinians out of frustration. Nothing about the bombing of Beirut and the murdering of civilians there either. It's all, oh, how is Israel going to manage? Poor Israel. And like I said earlier, it just doesn't slide anymore. And it's good to hear, Te Pāti Māori calling that out in the first couple of sentences as well. You cannot be the aggressor, and especially to this level, while still being held up as the victim. And it's just an outright failure of all our accountability institutions, both elected through into political roles, but the Fourth Estate is, man, I'm very critical of the media for those who listen to us. You're well aware of this, but I still just can't grasp it. I'm just, reality is right there in front of you. And surely there are people in these organizations who aren't complicit in genocide, who don't like the murdering of civilians. I don't know, like, or any other like number of things on this scale between I love genocide, which apparently is where a lot of people seem to be, as far as people with a platform go. And we should not do genocide. There's a whole range of different viewpoints along that scale where you could say, I'm not doing this anymore. Or I think we should probably report this truthfully. Or I should leak this. Or I should just quit my fucking job. I should go on strike, like, because we are no longer doing our roles. I got involved in journalism because I believed in accountability and I have values that like made me want to do this as a job. I just don't understand how so few people in the New Zealand media industry seem to have a soul.
Yeah, it's incredibly disappointing. And it's also just been interesting to see independent media platforms starting to see like the targeting of people who are trying to tell the truth in a time like this. And I think things are only going to get more difficult for journalists and independent journalists as well. As you know, as New Zealand gets and the West gets drawn more and more directly involved into this, as soon as you're officially at war with another country, like the discourse is just becomes much more closed in
Yeah,
terms
you
of
think
what,
it's rotten right now, eh?
yeah, we think it's rotten right now. Like we're about to find out, I think, which is why we have to really, campaign like hell to keep New Zealand out of direct involvement. I'm not like trying to downplay the role that New Zealand plays in US imperialism already, but we need to make sure that we don't get drawn directly into this. And maybe we could just finish up by kind of talking. I know you were interested in what might be next, what might be coming next. And we've already got tens of thousands of US soldiers in the region, and we're just very, very close, I think, to the potential of direct involvement of the US. And then that just sucks us all in right behind them. So we have to make sure that we clearly separate ourselves there and try to move a little further towards I think the idea of independent foreign policy is a little bit of a joke, but just to have a little bit more distance from, US foreign policy agenda. And yeah, and thinking about what is coming next, I know that, a lot of people are worried about how Israel retaliate. And I think that's just really interesting. I mean, we can talk about the fact that they have nukes, we can talk about what capabilities they have to strike Iran. And I think that those capabilities are quite limited. Like, they tend to only do well in killing, bombing schools and hospitals of their neighbors, because they have lots of short range capabilities, but very limited long range capabilities. Which means, I think, that the bigger threat is obviously if the US gets directly involved. But we shouldn't, I think that while, after October 7, we saw this horrific onset of a genocide, but, some people try to frame it as, Hamas shouldn't have done that because of the response. Sorry, I was just laughing at the way Israelis say Hamas, but we can't like expect them to do that type of calculus. Like, I'm a parent, and when your child is doing something they shouldn't be doing, you can't not intervene because you're worried they're going to have a tantrum. That's why they need discipline. They need to be disciplined, and Israel is very much this kind of misbehaving toddler, like in some ways. Like, just not what happens to a person when they're not given any red lines is what we're seeing with Israel. They're not being given any red lines. They're just, being given a blank check by the West to do whatever they want. And this is leading to just the most despicable, depraved things imaginable, and lots of things that are beyond our imagination as well. So yeah.
And this is why I say it's a US project, because there's only so long that, oh, we tried. We tried to stop them. Oh, we couldn't. Netanyahu's too wily. There's only so long that slides for. And just in the last couple of days, there was a Politico investigation where a number of people from the White House had gone on the record to say essentially some of the key advisors for the US and the Middle East were encouraging Israel and against the policy, the official policy of the White House, were encouraging the invasion of Lebanon. There are people in there who want this, and the talk of red lines is just bullshit. It's just to make people think that, and I think potentially and more seemingly to help provide evidence, regardless of how narrow it is. To Iran and to other groups in the area that they were trying to do something. But I think at this stage, I'm just not willing to give any benefit of the doubt.
And I think the axis of resistance are very well aware that this is we're in this for the long haul. I mean, everybody across the globe, it's exhausting to even watch what's happening. But this won't be over anytime soon. It's a war of attrition, and the only way that it will come to an end is if the axis of resistance is able to make this too costly for the West.
And this is one of those things as well, right? But they're at the front line and they're getting the consequences of that. But we will be at the front line of something soon enough, if they aren't successful. And if we aren't able to pressure our leaders to rein this in. The return of fascism from the periphery to the core is coming in swiftly. And one of the things which has been really concerning to me. If we accept that major media outlets, especially out of the US, are partners to the hegemony, are partners to US military interests, which with the likes of people like Jake Tapper and other US, what do you call them, news hosts, just being so overtly willing to lie on behalf of the genocidaires in Israel and the US is not far-fetched to think about. If the media is in some respect a willing partner in these activities, Something that really worries me is during the VP debate yesterday, the very first question to Waltz and Vance was, would you give the okay for a preemptive strike on Iran? And I would encourage everyone to be thinking very carefully about why that was the question, why that is being actively introduced into the discourse to US decision makers. You know, this wasn't asked of Israeli leadership. This is asked of the potential vice presidents of the United States. And consider, for whatever state you are a member of, whether you want to be a part of that. Because I think, like, one of the things that they really try and push is, like, we're the good guys, right? We're the good guys. That's the big bad. We've got to do something about it. They're evil. We're good. So we're allowed to do what we want as long as protecting ourselves. I don't think it was ever as clear as that, obviously. I don't think any of the evidence they gave for that was ever viable. But I think it's become very, very clear, and to more and more people, to more and more members of the public, that the US are the bad guys and they are willing to use force against anyone. And that's true across the rest of the West as well. You know, you mentioned people going after or states, nation states going after independent journalists. We've been seeing that happen in the UK and Germany. In the United States, you know, police force and terrorism legislation being used against people for the reporting on Gaza. And in the US, we've seen university administrations purchasing military-grade weapons for their
Children.
on-campus police forces, yes, to monster and abuse children of the United States. You know, who dare to protest on the university grounds against genocide. This isn't, I just hope the Axis of Resistance is able to win this one, honestly, because that blowback is coming hard and fast for the rest of us, whether you like expect it to or not, whether you believe that. You know, people often say politics is going to happen to you even if you don't get involved with it, right? Like, so is fascism. You know, so is all the rest of this stuff. It's just going to be about when it hits you, not
Yeah,
if.
and I do think that, you know, the ways in which we show our solidarity and support with Palestine in this moment and with Lebanon is important, but it's not particularly effective. But having said that, I am of the view that the best thing that we can do in support of Palestinians and their struggle is to open up a front in Aotearoa, and by that I mean participate in our decolonial actions and agendas taking place here with the threats that Māori are under as well, because we see that, like, Indigenous solidarity that we see from Te Pāti Māori, for example, you know, is a power anti-colonial, a powerful anti-colonial force for good, that we should be trying to build here in New Zealand, building our decolonial eco-socialist agenda is what we can do from here.
And I want to be very clear that the far right knows that that's the major risk to them, and that's why across the world the far right project has been attacking Indigenous rights. You know, we've just seen The Voice happen in Australia. We have the Treaty Principles Bill happening here. It is not just because they want to race bait; it's because they know that this is where the inflection point is, and they are
Exactly.
trying to get ahead of it and split us. And ensure that they can continue to be ascendant with the colonialist and, you know, fascist project. So yeah, absolutely agree. Join the other movements as well. It is, and it feels more like you're doing something too, if that matters to you,
Happening.
because it's happening in your communities, it's happening with people you know, and it can be more effective on the ground than, you know, giving support, as important as that is, to people halfway across the world. Thank you very much for joining us,
Thank
Arima.
you for all you do. Keep up the good work.
Where can people find you if they want to read your work?
They can't.
Look, right here on one of 200, when we're lucky enough to have you on the podcast, I guess.
Thanks so much, Kyle.
All right. That's been another episode of one of 200. Like, share, subscribe. Let people know that there's independent media out there that is at odds with and in comparison to mainstream media here in New Zealand, where we talk about things critically and actually analyze things in ways that make sense, give you the information that you need to make decisions about your political futures. We will be here intermittently releasing podcasts over the next month or so while our current events program is on hiatus. But keep in touch, join the Patreon, follow us on Twitter, and keep up to date on what's happening in independent left media in Aotearoa.
If artifices are then I'm living a pointless life, but learning all your lessons from your politics is no distinction. The words upon now is paid with good intentions. And I'll admit that I'm at a loss for what to say when they quote this as a cost we ought to stay. Cause I live amongst the people every day. This vindictive, forgetful fucking rain. It feels like we're on the road to hell.